Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint 101, the podcast where your favorite people at Waypoint play through a game that they didn't play through when it came out and talk about it and share notes and decide whether or not we like it or not and kind of go over some of the ideas we had during it. We're still kind of working out the format, but we are now in our second episode about Binary Domain, our second and last episode. It was a short game. I think we've all played through it all the way. Joining me, Patrick Klepek and Rob Zachney, you both beat Binary Domain.
Can I suggest an alternate premise for this podcast, which is not about playing old games and discovering what we think about them, replaying them, and kind of analyzing our thoughts? It's more, can we find games to thoroughly waste Rob Zachney's time and then force him to then talk about that time wasting for roughly 1 to 2 hours over the course of some podcasts and then really just squeeze that out of him? How much he enjoyed that game.
Checkmate, fuckos, because I watched the last hour or so of this game on YouTube.
You still watched it. You still invested the time.
Still an hour. So we beat this game. We played through the first three chapters last time. If you missed that episode, go back and listen to that one because – or don't. Or just stay here for this one, actually. I've changed my mind. I think that this game starts to get interesting in the first half but really catches its wave. It kind of lives up to its potential in the second half. I kind of saw some cool ideas in the first half of that game, but then in the second half, things really go for it. And it also kind of focuses down, I think. You spend a lot of that second half with just Faye and Kane, who are probably the most interesting characters in this game. What do you think?
Far and away, like, I think Kane is definitely, I think, the most interesting character to me because he is such a ridiculous... He starts out as a completely ridiculous, like, conceit, almost. Like, it's laughable that, you know, oh, it's the French robot. Like, I mean, he is this close to running around, like, beaning other robots with, like, a baguette and a bottle of wine. And yet, over the course of the game, he becomes, like, not only your MVP, but I think just one of the most... One of the characters I felt most connected to. Like it's weird... In that squad, like, the story of this game is the squad sort of becoming friends. Kane, I actually did sort of feel like that relationship was kind of earned.
Right.
I think that's true, and also one of the few characters that you don't, like, in some ways outright loathe. Kane is, like deeply likable. He was the character by the end of the game I wish that we learned more about, like, its backstory and... Like, how exactly Kane came to be? Like, why is he a French robot?
I don't know. I guess I never heard him refer to himself as he, but he calls himself Kane. It seems like that's a dude's name. I'm going to call Kane. I'm going to call him he. You're right. We don't get, like, deep backstory on him. We know that he's a member of a Rust crew. We know that he is out and out a robot, right? He is not one of these hollow children who has the visual features of a human. He knows he is a robot. But yeah, we don't actually get, like, deep backstory on him. We know more by the end of that game about Rachel and about the British crew, even though what we really know about them is, like, everyone else is kind of shitty. Like, the end of this game is you leave your other human teammates for Kane and Faye. Spend a lot of time with Kane and Faye. You meet a new dude who's from the kind of Japanese, like, resistance against the robotic and like, the kind of capitalist upper class. And then you return to your crew, and they are not happy that you have come around on robots. They don't really shit-talk Kane so much, but because he's just not around, he's kind of separated from you.
Kane is different. Like, they don't – like, the Hollow Children specifically, in being self-aware, consider them to have some form of personhood. And, like, maybe that's true of Kane. Like, again, like, that's part of – I like, especially given sort of the – like personality politics that dictate a lot of this game and the way the humans and more advanced robots interact with each other. Like, I would have been curious to find out, like, what is, like, Kane's response might have just been like, I'm just a robot. I'm here to help. And right. But maybe he does have like more like thoughtful, interesting responses to that. And I
there are some moments where he says something similar to like, but I can't think about that, or something very similar to that. It's been a couple of weeks since I beat the game now, and I wish I'd taken this one specific note down. But there is a moment towards the end of the game where he's like, but I'm just a robot, so... And I couldn't tell at the time if that was him joking or if that was true. If, like, he's literally not wired to be allowed to talk about that thing.
Okay, so we've all seen variations on the...
Yes.
What if they made robots that were like people, but then the robots had feelings? Whoa, what would be the difference between a person and a robot? We've all seen that a million times.
Yes.
And the message is always very easy. It's like, totally the robots are people. Like, you just need to expand your definition of consciousness and, like, personhood. And it's all good. Mm-hmm. What I like about this one is that the game actually does set up and kind of try and force you to identify with the sense of revulsion these people feel for the Hollow Children. Like... The early encounters with the Hollow Children are both full of, like, pain and pathos. They're, like, horrifying because you're kind of identifying with the robots. But I would also argue in those early scenes, you're also identifying with the people standing there. Their worlds are kind of being rocked here. And what they're seeing is, A, profoundly fucked up, and also kind of, like, a grotesque mockery of, like, the biological, the human. And what's cool... I find in this game is that it doesn't just sort of flip the switch and be like, dude, the robots are people. And everyone's like, on board, totally. It ends up in a much more ambiguous place where there's like grudging acceptance from some versus like other people completely like change sides.
Right. Well, and that depends also on what your relationship is with people by the end of the game. And I think we'll get to that in a second. But first, I do want to talk broadly about the thing you're talking about, which is this game ends up digging into racial politics in a way that I could not have expected, even though I knew it was always doing a race analogy. It ends up like, robots are people. Like, who counts as people? Who does the labor? Like, all of that is always going to be tinged with the racial politics. But what I didn't expect was the nuance with which it got into who counts as being a robot. So on top of the robots that are big mechs and the robots that are doing – that are serving you as waiters and waitresses, on top of the Hollow Children, what you learn in this final act of the game is that there is a third category of kind of what is classified as a robot, which are called hybrids. The big push at the end, the thing that people are revolted by more than anything else, is that there are robots that give birth to humans. There are robots,
and they can have sexual relations with a human and give birth to a hybrid that has elements of both. Like, it has, like, you know, like immunity to disease. Like, you know, they're much more powerful, and also, like, crucially, which makes the question for the people who are revolted and or not revolted and or confused, is like no traces of any sort of mechanical elements. And so
they're not mechanical, they're fully biological. And the thing that I love about that is there's actually this great exchange at the end of the game. So that's revealed because Faye is a hybrid and has been told by the AI that built all of the Hollow Machine or the Hollow Children and has taken over the visage of this super genius robot creator to face the world. Like, he kind of convinces her and shows her the truth about who she is and says, like, hey, this is the way forward for people. I already have my Hollow Children out in the world. They're already spreading hybrids throughout the world, and there are already 108 of them. And deal with that. Like, they're going to keep having babies, and that's it. And one, when this game came out, was, like, at the height of Tea Party, quote-unquote, anchor baby, like, terrible rhetoric, which is super fucking fascinating for this game.
I'm not going to give this game enough credit that it was actually sort of riffing on sort of, like, American politics. But the analogy of sort of, like, a certain segment, a privileged majority who want to continue having that privileged majority being uncomfortable by the notion of some sort of other encroaching upon that majority, especially if the premise is that it upsets the status quo. And in this version, upsetting the status quo is not just that they exist; it is that they exist and in some way are materially better than them, or are advantaged in a way through their ability to like not be susceptible to diseases and other things.
Right. Though the notion that the AI has is that that group will then spread through humanity, and eventually everybody will be immune to diseases and will be physically better through generational shifts. And it's always going to be a secret. Like, there wasn't a big reveal plan necessarily there until we started encroaching. It's a really complex thing. And also briefly, Japan has its own racial politics. It has its own ethnic politics around not only, you know, the sort of, you know, ethnicities that America is caught up in, but with other East Asian ethnicities, other Southeast Asian ethnicities and cultures and races. And so, like, they're, you know, those devs could have easily been talking about their own Japanese racial politics. But there is actually a very clear thing at the very end of the game for my last cutscene anyway. You know, you fight the boss. There's all sorts of stuff that we should get into and just kind of talk about at a more surface level. But then it cuts to a kind of wrap up from the kind of American war room that the whole thing kicked off in, the same place where you first learn that there are hollow children and that there are kind of these robot stand-ins for people. It goes back there, and it's like the president and his aide and Bergen, the doctor, the kind of other big robotics company leader. And the president is like, so what about the hybrids? Like, okay, we're going after all the hollow children. We know where they are. What about the hybrids? And his aide is like, Geneva is pursuing 107 of them. Tracking their locations will take time, but Rust crews will be dispatched with termination orders as soon as possible. And Bergen, who is the leader of this other AI robotics company, says, like, are we really considering the hybrids as robots? They're completely biological. And the president says, they're not born of humans, Mr. Bergen. The IRTA was very clear on this. Besides, the last thing the world needs is more racial tension. And that line at first is like this, like, good gut laugh of, like, oh, yep, racial tension's a fucking thing. But then the undercurrent is, one, recognition that race is social, that, like, oh, even though they're biological, even though they're made of the same thing as us, like, we are categorizing them as a different race because we know that's what's going to happen to them. Like, they come from something that isn't like us. They are not human. Two, instead of having racial tension and dealing with it, doing the hard work of, do you integrate something that's different into society? How do you, like, teach people that these people could just be people? And you can't. Fuck it. Kill them all. That's, like, the most cynical answer, like, to that problem. And it's just fascinating. And, like, that little line for me made that raise this game up from something that was, like, touching on something interesting to kind of gesturing to the fact that they had a larger handle on it. That, like, the president of the United States' answer was, like, that's going to be a lot of hard work. What if we just didn't? What if we just killed these 108 people instead of them becoming 1,008 and then 10,000, then a million? That would be way harder because then there'd be all this tension. So what if we just ended them? And for me, like, that was like, oh, wow, you went there. Huh. Okay. Cool.
Well, and I really enjoyed and found interesting the fact that, you know, part of the game's, like, longer gambit with the character of Faye, who I think a lot of people, because she's one of the more interesting personalities in the game, and she's the lone sniper in the game. I think a lot of people in both my playthroughs, I probably not accidentally chose her as one of the people I spent a lot of time with because it seemed advantageous to have someone with a sniper rifle with me at all times when I was in close quarters combat.
And it was,
but absolutely. And rather than it being something where, like, three-fourths of the game, like, she reveals and, like, ha ha, I was a robot the whole time, like. It's actually revealed – it actually plays upon, like, the more interesting notion throughout the game, the theme of the hollow children and these hybrids being unaware of what their actual past is. Like, that was how they were able to successfully integrate into society without a lot of the larger humanity being aware of them, is because they weren't aware themselves. And then so when the dynamic occurs in which she learns of her past – goes through a complicated, although albeit fairly short, arc over you know, how she shifts between that. The idea that rather than the entire group accepting, well, Faye helped us. Like, there's a version of the story where, like, everyone's, like, disgusted and gives an exception to Faye, right? Like, generally speaking, would say they are disgusted by hybrids, want nothing to do with them, but then draw this exception. Oh, well, this is one of the good ones, right? Like, which is, again, like, plays into, like, larger racial politics. But they don't do that, and they actually have characters who, like, remain ultimately disgusted with this person you have aligned with, who at no point have sort of a conversion. They are disgruntled and decide to fight alongside her, depending on how your ending plays out, because there's a larger threat. But at no point is there a kumbaya moment in saying with everyone. Like, there are some people that just say, no, like, this person is bad. This person is wrong. This person does not deserve to exist. Whatever good they've imbued upon the group and whatever good they've done to the group, they're fundamentally wrong. And I think it's interesting that the game commits. That's part of the advantage of a large group of characters the game does have, even if some of them don't get fleshed out or have particularly interesting backdrops. The fact that they exist to voice that viewpoint and not shift from it, I think was worthwhile.
Yeah, I think this was, like, it's kind of chilling. Like, the best you're going to get in that sort of denouement is, what's the British dude's name, Charlie?
Yes, I think so.
Charlie. Yeah. Charlie and Rachel are the British two.
The best you're going to get from Charlie is sort of this, like, really cold statement that, like, you know, really, I should just kill you here and now, because if it's not me, it's going to be another Rust crew. Like, they're going to get you. And, you know, you might, like, there's no point in running. And that's sort of, that is what passes for the kumbaya moment. And I like that it comes from Charlie, because I guess I didn't entirely loathe Charlie, because, like, Charlie's sort of your classic British spy, in that, like, this is kind of what he's doing with his, like, 20s and 30s, but after that he's going to go back to his books. He's a sensitive soul underneath all of it. And then, like, when the chips are down, when the rubber meets the road, he's like, ugh, I wish I'd kill this thing, but I guess that wouldn't go over well, so I guess we owe you one. See you in hell.
Yep. And I like that so much more than that alternative that Patrick set up. That was like, that is the kumbaya moment. That is the coming together. Like, you know, obviously I like stories when people come together. I like, there's a place in my heart for people overcoming difference. But one of the reasons I often dislike the sci-fi or fantasy analogy for racism or oppression more generally is that it does not contend with the realities of your friends being bigots, right? That, like, growing up, I had friends who were homophobic, and at some point, like, we had to have that moment of, like, listen, you need to either, like, what's the line from the new Twin Peaks? Like, fix your hearts or die. Like, you need to actually have that conversation where, are you with us on this one, or are you just really fucking set in your backwards way? And this game had those moments in a way that was just such a good surprise for me.
There's something else I like here as well, and that is that the forces of the status quo, the people who really want to wipe out the hybrids, the hollow children, just really, like, annihilate sort of self-directed AI in this universe. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying they're protecting the status quo, and so you get that line at the end, we don't need more racial tension, any of that stuff. Yeah. But what's made clear, actually, in the early chapters, which I still think are shitty, but they're important, because what they're establishing is, there's actually already a narrowing definition of humanity underway that these people are promoting. That, like, it's very clear from the start. Like, we don't know much about what America looks like. You get some hints, but, like, definitely in Japan, you get the classic undercity trope. But it's very clear that, like, as far as the powers that be, the people who live at this level are also not really people. It's just, you know, it's feral children. It's gangsters, it's people, like, living on the ragged edges. And it really is an effective moment when you sort of, like, burst to the surface and you see, like, you know, kind of what you come to expect from an anodyne, glossy corporate future, right? It's it's coffee shops, it's cafes, it's clear skies, it's, you know, it's polish and chrome. And I think that's an effective juxtaposition that, you know, because of the pressures the society is under, that competition for resources, that competition for, you know, security and stability in this, you know, climate-ravaged world is already leading people to increasingly write off large segments of humanity in the name of preserving that order.
Right. Well, and then, of course, that all ends in the kind of, like, hypocritical spectacle of, oh, we need to secure this evil AI so that we can have it instead of destroying it, right? Like, that is the, again, this notion that we decide what is good AI and bad AI, the same way that racists decide who counts as white, the same way that, you know, any status quo decides who is on the inside and who is on the outside. In this case, it is arbitrarily better for us to have this AI and use it than for it to continue existing in the world, or for it to continue, or for you to destroy it so that it is not a threat to anybody. And that obviously cuts off to a huge boss fight against a big red mech, which made me very happy. I really liked that boss fight. Yeah, that boss fight was fun. I don't know. Like, I actually really like all of the boss fights in this game, partially because I like the weird mech designs. But I also just kind of had a good time with the combat in this game in general. Someone wrote in to say that they couldn't play with a controller on PC. I didn't have that problem, but I could imagine that being hell.
Let me tell you. So this game has a fucked up relationship with controllers. I have spent hours in Steam threads, in YouTube videos. If you were lucky enough. Seems like you were to turn on this game and have it work with a controller, you were like one in a million, because by and large, so essentially what happened to like technical is like the way Windows interprets game controllers has changed across like Windows 7, 8, 10. And it's like direct input and there's like all what's happening behind the scenes has changed. And so sometimes when you turn on a controller, you're lucky enough that it maps directly. Other times when people turn on a controller, and especially if you're using a wireless controller, like for my controller, if I would use the triggers, it would look up and down. Like hitting start would cause it to fire a gun. Like it was just mapped incorrectly all over the place. And I used a weird script that someone put on Steam that could have been a virus. But it, for the first half of the game, it fixed my controller issues and allowed me to use my Xbox One controller. And then it just stopped working. And every other solution I used, even manually assigning the commands to my controller. So the second half of the game, I played with a mouse and keyboard.
No.
It was not ideal.
That sounds like hell.
Yeah, it was not great. Because I think the combat's okay. I like the... I'm a big fan of games with destructive elements. And specifically, I enjoy this game. I always found it satisfying to hear the ding when I got a headshot on a robot. And that not only was it a ding with a headshot and a score that I got attached to it, which I enjoyed, it was the ding with the score attached to it, and that also then that robot briefly fought on my side.
And you got reputation up sometimes with your crew. Like, there's lots of that. I mean, we mentioned this in the first episode, that, like, for a game that's about how maybe robots are people, it really, like, just pushes you, it immerses you in this just luxurious feeling of tearing robots apart limb from limb. It feels so good to rip the plating off of their shins. Like, it's just the best, and that makes me feel bad. Another brief thing about this game is, and I mentioned this before, that it comes from some of the developers behind the Yakuza series. And one of the things that I'm really curious about is, now I kind of want to go check out Yakuza Dead Souls, the one that's the Yakuza game with all the zombies in it, because there is spectacle in this game that is not in the Yakuza games. Like, Yakuza games are, despite being open world games where you run around and get into like huge fist fights on the top of, you know, towers, and there are explosions and stuff now and then, this game has spectacle in spades in that final third, where there are, you know, helicopter chases, and there are, you know, you're running on a bridge as it's collapsing, and none of it's like A-class material, don't get me wrong, but I liked seeing that team explore that stuff and try it out, and I want to see them do that again, and it kind of bummed me that, I mean, this game sets up, depending on your ending, it sets up a sequel that I wish we had gotten that could have maybe fixed some of the things, but more than anything, I want to see this team do big budget action just to see it again.
Maybe we should talk about how people's endings played out if we got anything different. Do you want to talk about yours first, Austin?
Well, so I got the best ending. I got the ending with – I maxed out my reputation with everybody. Did anybody not get that? And then we can maybe
– I do not think I would have gotten the best ending. I'll say that. And I've watched some not-so-great endings that I was probably on track for.
So I guess we should talk about what the best ending actually is, and then we can work backwards.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So there are a bunch of things that happen at the end of this game. So you wind up, obviously it's the end of a game. You wind up going to confront the leader of this corporation who builds robots. It's revealed that he's been dead for a long time, and that he has been replaced by the AI, an AI that he built, kind of unleashed AI.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Who's the one who built the Hollow Children, and then those kind of created the hybrids. And then you get to this moment where it all comes down to a head. You've at this point, Faye has been revealed to be a hybrid, and she's working on the AI side instead of your side. You kind of fight her to a standstill, and you have the opportunity to – or Dan has an opportunity to kill her, but like in his heart of hearts decides, at least for me, he loves her and so and owes her one, right? Because she saved his life a couple of times at this point. And so he shoots in a way that makes the team think he's killed her. But haha, he hasn't. He just shot near her head. He didn't shoot her in the head. Classic Dan. And then you go to destroy the robot AI, and it's revealed that, oh no, the U.S. Army wants to stop you. So then that's where it all kind of comes down to what level are your social links at? Did you max those out? Did you go get pizza enough times with Big Bo? And there are like a couple of things that happen in a row. So Big Bo and you, Bo points
dumb.
A fucking gun at you, and he's
God
like, listen, man, come on, Dan, don't you know you can't trust hybrids? Listen, Dan, it's orders. It's orders is orders. And if you have a high enough reputation with him, he will have your back in the end. He's like, you didn't think I was really going to shoot you, did you, Dan? Which is good.
Is it good?
Yeah, because Bo could have shot me. Like, I think there's a version of this game where I almost like the version of the game more where your relationship with Bo falls apart because you've grown and he hasn't.
Yeah,
right?
that's the one I wanted. Like, I understand that by getting the social link, Bo sides with you, but you're right, the more interesting version of that relationship is where they've bonded over so many really shitty things, like misogynistic shitty things. Like, they're both bad people in a lot of ways, and I don't really understand, like, the relationship, the romantic relationship between Faye and him is not earned whatsoever in that game.
Between Faye and Dan.
Faye and Dan, yes.
Yeah. I thought for a moment that you had gotten some sort of Bo and Faye relationship. I was like, whoa, wait a second.
No, Bo and Dan. If you get their social link up enough, then things start happening with Bo and Dan.
That's what I'm talking about.
As much as I find those characters like kind of shitty and reprehensible, you identify them as close friends. And so for them to fall apart on sort of like these ideological lines of like what it means to be human or accept this personhood as acceptable would have been an interesting fault line in that relationship. So it's like I briefly felt like Big Bo, but then I was also like, oh, like that's a less interesting wrinkle for that final moment.
So the thing there is he needs to be at very high for him to not betray you. Even if it's high, which is like level 2, he'll still betray you. Or you're in the third kind of, they're kind of 4 tiers. It's like starting and then like middle and then high and then very high. So if he's in that third tier, he will still betray you, which is at least kind of interesting. Like I can imagine a lot of players that didn't use him that much and didn't get up to very high. The other part there is that if you have very high with everybody, Kane shows up via jetpack or jet boots and like just kind of drops in and is like, yo, the squad's all here, let's go. And that was actually, again, this like, like action movie, anime. But I was like, I kind of wish Kane had just come back on his own behalf and not because I maxed out everything with everybody.
I don't think I got Kane to come back.
Oh, that's a shame. I got things like I got good pictures. When Kane shows up, everyone kind of goes like back to back and you get like that, you get the kind of like really cool shot of all 6 of you or whatever, like getting ready to fight the big robots. It's nice. But I guess is there also a way for Kane to come back and then Bo to fight? I guess you didn't get Kane at all, right?
I don't think so.
Huh. Yeah, I guess I'm looking at this chart now, and it says, these are the combinations of how they affect each other. You didn't fulfill the requirement for Kane to come back or Bo to be loyal. Kane won't show up. You'll have to fight Bo. Rachel will die protecting Faye. That's interesting. Rachel dies protecting Faye. That's interesting. Wait, what's her argument? Like, why does she suddenly like Faye? Was she, like, secretly pro-Faye the whole time and just kind of kept her mouth shut? I need to go dig up that ending now.
Yeah.
Also, you fulfill the requirement for Kane to come back, but not for Bo to be loyal. Kane will come back and save Faye, and then you'll have to fight Bo. There's also... Oh, wow. So you could do a thing where, like, Kane doesn't come back, but Bo dies protecting Faye. I want to see all of these scenes. I need to dig these scenes up because those seem like leaps for those characters. Like, I need to know if there's, like, some dying words that they say for why they protect Faye. Because based on what I know about – like, I hope Bo is just like, oh, you're really hot. I'm Big Bo.
And,
like,
and then he dies.
And then he dies, exactly. So yeah, that's the end of that game.
You know,
is...
you laugh, but that's about – the level of dialogue you would expect that they gave to Big Bo throughout an entire game.
Yeah, no, that's about right, probably. Ugh. Any other takeaways from the end of this game?
I'm glad that Faye and Dan don't get together and that she says she has to go off on
Wait, did you not get the post-credit scene?
I guess I didn't get that.
There's
In my room. I hit Alt F4. I hit Alt F4 because it doesn't let you skip the credits. Sorry, game.
There's a yeah.
I didn't need to see the credits twice.
There is they get together. Well, there's like Faye is walking through China, right?
Uh-huh.
And robots show up. Robots plus people, and they're like, "You got to go," because the president, remember, was like, "Oh, there's the 108th one, but are getting to her now," and they come to shoot her. She, like, turns and, like, pulls out her sniper rifle. And then, like, machine gun fire comes from behind her. And it's Dan, who has just a huge machine gun, who, like, jumps down from a building and fucks up all the robots, scares the people off. He doesn't kill any people somehow. And they all retreat. And all the robots get destroyed. And she's like, "I didn't think you'd come." And he's like, "Oh, you know, I work things out," or whatever the fuck he says.
Oh, that's way less interesting than mine. You ruined it. You just ruined it for me. Because it was way more interesting that Faye acknowledges and accepts that they have something and could have something and says, "No, I need to go do my own thing." Like, that's... Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well...
Yeah, and that to me is where I was like, oh, they are setting up a sequel. That was like... Oh, this is going to be a game about Dan and Faye fighting for robot rights or whatever.
Which I would have played that game.
Yeah, me too. Like, that's the thing is, like, I definitely was ready for, like, I wish this had been the first game. I wish we were playing this because a sequel had been announced.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that would have been all right. Mostly because, like, I don't think it's a perfect game. I think this game has lots of problems ranging from its characters are kind of contemptible to, like, the action is okay but isn't going to, you know, change the world for you. But at the end of the day, I just kind of liked being in it. I wish that it had the Yakuza open world stuff a little bit. I liked talking to characters in that world. I wanted more goofy side stories. Like, I would go to a mahjong parlor in future Tokyo. Like, let me go to karaoke with Faye and Big Bo. Come on.
I guess I turned around where I liked the characters more than you guys, I think. Like... Like, not in that they were likable way. Okay, there's a difference between likable and liking the characters themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of them were not likable, but I liked the characterizations, with the exception of Big Bo, I think, because, like, he's just... This is not a game of, like, great subtlety, but even by those standards, Big Bo is, like... It's like he stumbled in from a different game, or... You know what I mean? It's very cartoonish at times. But I think for me, what started to get at me, Austin, is just like, you describe how great it is ripping these robots apart and you enjoyed all those boss battles. And that's the stuff I really found myself getting really impatient with, in part because, like, I have never liked the boss battle structure where it's duck and cover around an arena, aim for the weak point, repeat for like 10-15 minutes, and then eventually the big thing falls down and dies. Like, and that this game goes to that structure an awful lot, and I know it's a familiar structure, but like, it really did feel after a point where it's like every 5 minutes I was in one of those damn battles. And I think that's one of the things that really turned me off. I love the set piece stuff. Like, it wasn't perfectly executed, but those parts where you're, like, whipping along in cars and, like, getting in these running gun battles, that stuff is cool. But the boss battles weren't doing it for me, however good the robot design was. And also, I just didn't think... I didn't really enjoy it as a cover shooter that much either. I felt it felt like slow and cumbersome, and my squad mates kept pushing me out of cover, which was really infuriating.
You should replay Gears of War, which is for me like just as slow, if not like I don't know. I maybe I just had a bad time with Gears of War 4 in a way that more people didn't, but like. I didn't feel slow or cumbersome here compared to so many other third person. You know what? Or like The Division, frankly. Like, third person cover based shooters are often very slow and cumbersome. And I think I've just kind of internalized that at this point. And I'm living
that life. I think
for
me, it was just all the stun effects. Like, all.
Yeah, no,
like,
so I'm with Rob. Like, I often felt that I was not able. You're right that it has the same sort of lumbering effect of a lot of those types of games, but I often felt that the enemies we were facing, especially the bosses, had the ability to stun you and keep you on the ground and force you to use a medkit in a way that did not feel congruent with my ability to move as a character.
Sure. By the end of that game, like, I don't know if I just upgraded my gun the right way or what, but, like, nothing could fucking stop me. Like, it was... I was not even in cover by the end of that game because nothing could show up on the screen without being destroyed instantly. Like it, which felt like it scratched those itches that I try not to let get scratched by games anymore in terms of like pure empty power fantasy, like pure muscular, like, ugh, I just want to tear these fuckers up. And it totally worked for me, mostly because of the animation on the way robots fell apart and the fact that like – So, like, a good example is early on in that game, the worst enemies for me to fight were those shield enemies who would just fuck me up. Like, I just couldn't get a fucking shot in underneath their shields. And by the end of the game, because of the accuracy and the damage was up on my gun, like, two bullets would very quickly get under the shield, and they would just collapse into a pile on the ground. And I was like, I'm just the best. Like, no wonder Dan is a survivor. No one can fucking touch him. Blah! And, like, it was a good feeling for... So, I don't know. I think maybe I just got... I'm the 1 in 10 who maybe got the lucky build or something where I wound up having it the
I think
right
it's
time.
Just,
I don't know.
You put Austin Walker in a robot shooting gallery. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're pro-robot or against it. It's just that's right. Austin's
– I will,
that's where Austin belongs.
Listen, here's a complaint. That game should have actually done something from one of the Gears of War games, which is put me in a big robot. Put me in the big robot suit. I wanted to kill the guys in those big American robot suits and get in one of their mechs for that final boss fight.
Yeah.
That would have been really fucking good, especially if your whole crew did. Binary Domain 2 coming never. This note
accurate.
Comes in from, let's see, this one's a really good one, from Baron Von Baron over on our forums, who says, everyone got so angry when I chose the goddamn dialogue option. Come on, we just fought a giant spider robot. Goddamn is absolutely the appropriate reply.
Oh, yeah, the game was deeply inconsistent at communicating or giving you any sort of agency or creativity in your answers because it tied the system. Every single answer was tied to an up or down binary system in a way that did not feel organically connected to why they should react. Like, there should have been times where it's like, yo, just let me say what I want to say and you're not going to approve or disapprove. But at the same time, as someone that didn't care that much about what ending I got because I'd played it before and you can look up things on YouTube, I found it deeply funny when I would say, like, there's a moment in the battle where Faye has turned on your group and she these ninja characters are fighting you and she's constantly, as she's sniping at you, yelling at you, and you're given an opportunity to yell back at her, and you can say things like stop or like, oh no, I just kept shouting, I love you, and I just like to imagine that Dan was just sitting there shouting, I love you, like over and over, and I was like just cracking up the whole time I was doing it. Just spam.
I was
trying to make the battle go longer so I'd get another opportunity to say I love you again.
God.
I just love the conversation system really is like Marshawn Lynch simulator. Like, it really, what do you think of that? Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Exactly. No. It's really funny. And I guess I apparently don't
I'm
know.
I'm only here so I don't get fined. Why was that not an answer?
God. It's why do you think they call it binary domain, guys? It's because there's only good things or bad things. It's binary.
Boo.
That's That's why. Hey, I mean, actually, the reason that it seems like they call it that is because you're either a human or a robot, right? Like, I don't care if you're this weird middle thing. No, you're a human or you're a robot.
Did David Cage consult on this game?
He might have. I don't know. This comes in from CA O'Connor, who says, so, fun fact about Binary Domain that I don't imagine you guys knew. Travis Willingham, the voice of Dan, and Laura Bailey, the voice of Faye, are married, and Troy Baker, the voice of Charlie, was the best man at their wedding. The three of them are part of an interesting close-knit group of video game voice actors that all started out doing dub work for Funimation before getting big, and are, with the exception of Baker, in a long-running tabletop gaming YouTube series DM'd by Matthew Mercer, another Funimation alum and the voice of McCree from Overwatch and other stuff, with a bunch of medium to big name voice actors. I think that's Critical Role. I think Matt Mercer GMs the Critical Role series. I played a game with Matt once, and it was fun. We did a game called Dogs in the Vineyard. I think we talked about it actually on this podcast forever ago. Look that up. And C. O'Connor adds, and this is maybe the more meaty part of this. Also, Austin's point about hollow children as a metaphor for passing is the robots are passing for human without even knowing it. As someone who passes for white and only had it revealed in their late teens that they're mixed race and that their ethnic identity is way more complicated than they thought. The revelation that the hollow children have is, while definitely a way bigger and dramatic than what I've gone through, an odd flavor of relatable and applicable to me, with the eventual reveal of Faye's parentage perhaps being even more so. Perhaps I'm being selfish, but I feel like the game opened up the opportunity to explore Faye's reaction to the reveal. Sorry, but I feel like the game... It does just say that. Perhaps I'm being selfish, but I feel like the game opened up the opportunity to explain Faye's reaction to the reveal and then does very little with it. The Let's Play I watched of Binary Domain was actually quite some time ago, so I may be forgetting some scenes. Anyway, good luck with the continuing book club. Maybe find a game next time that gives a better first impression than Binary Domain. Fair! I think that's really interesting. I think the stuff around passing is throughout that game really interesting and then gets more complicated by the addition of the hybrids who are passing in this other way, who are passing like not just visually but biologically. Like part of what Dan's defense of Faye is like, but I stitched her shut. Like she's a person in there. She doesn't have any metal robot parts. And then his friends are like, still don't count. I can't believe you're a robot lover. And like, whoa, okay. It's like that. Okay, thanks, Bo. This last thing, I'm just going to read an excerpt. This comes in from Owen Kettleson, who actually went on Medium and wrote a long piece about his playthrough of the game for our club. You can look that up at medium.com/Owen Kettleson, KETILLSON. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to read this section. After the player learns of the secret robot premise, it's hard not to look at everything in Binary Domain under the assumption that someone will turn out to be a cyborg in the end. It's kind of a Chekhov's gun principle, a natural trope of storytelling that is well-trodden enough that people will pick up on it right away. I think it's a fair assumption that most players come out of the flashback early on in the game thinking, okay, clearly someone important in this game is a robot. Let's try to figure it out. This makes Binary Domain into a kind of passive mystery game on top of being a third-person shooter. Regardless of their original intent, every event, character, or even game mechanic gets put through the "are they a robot?" ringer. For example, when meeting Faye, the player might think, this Chinese sniper showed up all alone saying her friends died on the way over. Is that true? Or is that something a robot would say? And it can go on and on. The player can and will second guess just about everything under this examination. Is this point-based character trust system a way for my potentially robot self to emulate human relationships? Am I nicknamed the Survivor because I survived near-death experiences in the past? Or because I'm a robot that can be brought back to life if I die? Binary Domain starts to suffer here because its mechanics and narrative beats can't bear the weight of the player's constant scrutiny. Take the voice dialogue system, for example. When it works, if it works, it can produce moments of real intimacy between the characters and the player. But the system isn't going to tell you if anyone is a robot or not. It's just a neat way to make the characterization of Dan and his squadmates more immersive. But the structure of the game's twist doesn't encourage the player to revel in that immersiveness. It encourages them to be playing detective and analyzing every word choice of theirs. The player can't regularly make bonds with the squadmates when the premise of the game's plot puts walls between them instead. And he kind of goes on to say, unfortunately, Binary Domain does not, for him, answer this Chekhov's gun premise. He's not very satisfied with the hybrid stuff at the end of the game. Go read that. It's actually really good. Again, you can find that at medium.com/Owen Kettleson. Owen-Kettleson.
I will say I was convinced it was going to be Dan. Like, me too. I was, like, especially because that early scene, it's the second time you see a hollow child get like brutally murdered when you're in the Undercity. It's kind of an excruciating scene, but Dan's reaction to it also, like, seems particularly, like, nuanced, right? Like, you can sort of see he's maybe identifying with the Hollow Children more than everyone else, who just walks away. And I was thinking, yeah. Like, yeah, that's right. You're on some level, you know, buddy, you know. And so I was, like, kind of smugly, like, waiting for that reveal. And it made the Fae thing probably a little more satisfying.
Well, and there's this whole other reveal, though, right, which is that we didn't talk about this at all, and we only have like 5 minutes left, but the reveal from one of the things that's interesting about this, about Dan's position on Hollow Children and on quote-unquote scrapheads is, because he's actually called a scraphead lover at the end of that game, not a robot lover, is that it seems like his position is that he doesn't want there to be a world in which robots have autonomy. Right? They can't. It's bad if robots pass for human. It's bad if robots do things they're not supposed to do. But when his backstory is revealed, it's done like in a single cutscene, there's a flashback of him beating up a robot with a baseball bat. And bit by bit, we get more and more of that scene until finally we see the whole scene. And it's his father drunk, asleep on the couch, Dan with a bruise on his face, his mother with bruises on her face. And what's revealed is that Dan is upset that the robot, who like is their household cleaner or whatever, didn't step in to stop his father from abusing them. And that was like, oh, your real problem is that robots aren't human in the sense that they can't have compassion and that they can't step outside of their programming and do what's necessary to save you. And to make people's lives better, which maybe explains part of why he comes around on Kane, right? That like Kane consistently does the thing that is necessary to help people. And that's, I don't know, like that ended up being this whole other element that I wish they'd gotten into more with him, because it does put his essential relationship with robots in a different place than like what Big Bose is, which is just, no, they shouldn't be like people.
Or maybe their whatever his moment is just not revealed to us. Like, I think I would have loved to have known more about the individual body. Like, some people are just straight up roboist, right? Or personist, right. Like there are people who just fundamentally on a guttural level don't have a rationale for why they feel that way, except that they feel threatened. But right. I thought it was interesting that at least with Dan, they gave him sort of an emotional, like, reason for his reaction and his, like, sort of contradictions in his reactions. And I my guess is more often than not, characters would have had some sort of moment that helped define why they feel the way they did.
Yeah. In general, I wish we'd gotten more character stuff. Like, I think that ends up being the takeaway. Again, it's one of those things that makes the Yakuza game so good, is lots of time spent with the characters. All right, I think it's going to do it for us for this episode of Waypoint 101. We haven't quite decided the next game, but I have some ideas in my head. We should talk about it off mic, and maybe we'll put up a poll for the next one. How's that sound?
Yeah, and people should jump into the thread and suggest ones if there's games you think would be good that we haven't.
Yeah, totally. I will once this thread goes up, I'll drop a poll in there. Off mic, we should decide like 4 or 5 games that would be good. I have some good ideas, so let's do that. Until then, you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Rob?
At Rob Zachney.
Patrick?
You can find me at Patrick Klubik. And I would mention one thing with this game is that if you have apprehension about the combat or you tried it and didn't get into it, I think this is the kind of game that you could watch a Let's Play of and still get a lot out of it and not feel... the mechanics, I think, are interesting, but are fine, and your mileage may vary based on your love of mechs and dismantling of mechs. You could watch a Let's Play of this and get largely a lot of the discussion aspect out of it, just fine.
Yeah, I bet you can even find like a YouTube video that strings together the cutscenes.
Yeah,
in a
probably
way that makes sense.
Yep.
That stuff's out there. Those are cool. I love it when someone is like, I'm going to turn this into a 2-hour movie. That stuff is rad. All right, that's going to do it for us. As always, shout-outs to Tim Barnes. You can find on Twitter at TimBarnes451 for doing this great production work. And shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use his song Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can find everything that we do at waypoint.vice.com. Peace.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.